When it comes to, you know, pointing out this, the Jewish group and saying that Jews are the ones that are creating, that are in control and have all the power. And I, like I said, I think a lot of people would agree that there's definitely a disproportionate representation in a lot of these industries and positions of power. But how is that any different than the white man? You know, like when people would make the, I mean, we've been hearing this for the last 10 so years with like critical race theory. I mean, this is a tenet of critical race theory of saying like white men have been in control, disproportionate amount of control, in charge. We have to break down the white man a bit and, you know, understand that they're in this power. And of course it's not all, the vast majority of white men have no power whatsoever, right? It's just the powerful white men who have a lot of the power and have disproportionate amounts of wealth and disproportionate amounts of representation in politics and, you know, more so than women and whatnot. So how is it any, I mean, isn't it just a group that, you know, white men just kind of ended up with this good old boys club, guys they wanted to smoke cigars and play golf with, and they would hire people that were just like them, and they kind of all ended up in positions of power. They maybe had biasness against women or against people coming from different countries with accents or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's like, in, is it, because you're asserting that it's inherent in the teaching because there's an us and them mentality. But isn't that with any group?
Well, I guess it is, but if you have with a group, it is usually immersed in tremendous global wealth, money, like, you know, Massey said, the eight-pack babysitter,
right?
That means
right.
money. That means money. Then it becomes very dangerous. The Mexicans I know don't have a lot of money.
Right.
They're not forming any love groups. And the whites.
I don't know. Those Cubans have been pretty darn powerful over the last several decades here in this country. The Cuban lobby
The whites have their own lobbies. And it's usually maybe the tobacco lobby. Maybe it's some entrepreneurial lobby. But that lobby is different. Mm-hmm. The Jewish lobby, because they're not looking, oh, how we can make more money in our business. They already have the money. Now they're looking to influence legislation. They're looking to influence political policy. They're looking to influence who we bring over to America. Let's bring this war criminal. Mm-hmm. Let's have Speaky Johnson put his arm around him and say how wonderful. Let's have Trump pull out the chair like he's a waiter and have him sit. Let's have Trump wear a blue tie and the war criminal wear the red power tie. That's because these lobbies have tremendous money that fills the campaign coffers of every politician. It was Jimmy Carter that pointed this out. After that, Dershowitz would not allow him at any Democratic convention. He mm-hmm. said, unless you play ball with the Jewish lobby, he said Israel lobby, he meant the same thing, your political career is finished.
Mm-hmm. Well, money is certainly powerful. There's no doubt about that. Money is
follow the money. Follow the money.
Yeah, follow the money. Always follow the money. Brother Nathaniel, interesting conversation. You are an interesting character. There's no doubt about it. I came across you when I would debate a lot about Jesus not being a Jew. That came about after World War II, this kind of idea that Jesus was a Jew. It was not thought about prior to that point, but I make the argument all the time that that's just not the case. From any perspective, ethnically, racially, or even religiously. And you'd kind of come up quite a bit in some of those debates that I had online. And so I've followed you and seen some of the interesting things that you've said. Some that I maybe don't agree with, but you're nonetheless a very interesting person and knowledgeable for sure in Christianity and in the Bible. And you're an interesting guy. So people can find you. So I appreciate you being here and having this conversation.
Why don't you run for congresswoman or congressman or senator?
Oh, right. I don't want them to blackmail me. What I have is the ability to be blackmailed. I mean, even if I don't care about They all know. I mean, the blackmailers that run Congress, they know how to.
You mean
get
bribe?
To
you don't mean blackmail. You mean bribe?
No, I think they would blackmail. I think they would blackmail me. I think what they would do is they would find some dirt on a family member of mine, and they know I would do anything to protect my family. So, for me, like if they came out with something on me, I'd be like, whatever, I don't care. Like,
well, that's very anti-Semitic of you. Because who would do that?
But if they were to, if they were to come after my family, yeah, I mean that would be, that would be challenging. And I think that's a lot of them. I think a lot of these kind of Epstein style blackmail rings. They know that they don't have to get the person necessarily. If they just get somebody they love and care about who they want to protect, it's just as good. So
okay. All right, I think I'd be too easily blackmailed. You're a very intelligent, insightful woman.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're a good communicator. Yeah. I enjoyed this immensely.
Thank you.
I hope you don't get in trouble or listed by the ADL after this, Kim.
Oh, maybe. I mean, I don't know. You're definitely, I was nervous going into this conversation. Still a little nervous about it, but that's okay. You know, we all have to kind of get over our discomfort. There's just a natural discomfort when having these types of conversations. And what I try to do is I try to say, okay, what if I were having this conversation about Scientologists? I don't think I would flinch as much, right? I mean, I would be like, oh yeah, the Scientologists are weird. I mean, I don't think anybody has any problem saying that. I think a lot of us sit there and go, yeah, I mean, look, they're kind of weird. And you know, there's a lot of power there with Hollywood, and they, you know, nobody has any problem saying that. Nobody really has a problem saying bad things about Christians, right? People will say things about Christians all the time. Nobody has any problem saying things about a lot of groups of people, or just not even religious groups, but even racial groups. I mean, you hear people talking about Asians or Chinese are coming or something, you know, and nobody bats an eyelash. But so I try to remember that, you know, this is just a programming. You know, I have a programming from birth. I think all of us do. Especially when it comes to Jews, we've been all taught a lot of sympathy since Holocaust, World War II. You know, that's the only group I think any of us were ever taught about having massive persecution against. It was never any other group. I mean, plenty of groups suffered genocides. Plenty of groups had many horrible things happen to them, but we were all taught often about the Holocaust, and we feel very bad. And so we have these reactions that we wouldn't otherwise have if we just swapped out the words with like Scientologist or Jehovah's Witness or Mormons even. Nobody ever tiptoed around criticizing and mocking me when I was a Mormon. Yeah, they would just straight up to my face.
Can I say something about growing up in the 50s about this Holocaust thing? Or am I taking up too much time?
Maybe no, go ahead. I just don't know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you'll like it. You'll like it. It's not anti-Semitic at all. Okay. So every Jewish kid in the 50s has the Encyclopedia Britannica in his room, like 15 volumes. Okay. And I had what was the 1953. I was born in 1950, and my dad bought the 1953 edition of an Encyclopedia Britannica. That's just what he bought. Okay. So there is a section on World War II by a famous Jewish historian at the time named Jacob Marcus. I'll never forget. Okay. So my dad wanted me to read it. And other portions too. All right. And Jacob Marcus said that in the work camps, they weren't called concentration camps. They were called work camps to support the war effort. There were many political prisoners, Jehovah's Witnesses, and gypsies in there. The political prisoners were Jews because most of them were promoting the Communist International. Mm-hmm. And he says, because of the Allied bombings, many perished, probably 200,000. Jews mostly, but gypsies and Jehovah's Witnesses. We didn't hear this word 6 million. We never heard this word concentration camps. We never heard of extermination. I'm just telling you, growing up in the 50s, and anybody Jewish growing up in the 50s would affirm this. We didn't hear this. Yeah. We didn't hear of gas chambers. And if we did hear of Zyklon B, it was a delousing agent. And what I've learned about Germans being in the business world for so long is that Germans are they put people to work. They're very efficient people. They're not going to waste so much time and money killing somebody that can do work. So Auschwitz says work makes free. Now, just to make the story a little more lively, sometime in 1967, this whole Holocaust thing becomes a big thing. All right, so we watched the Ed Sullivan Show, 8 p.m. every Sunday night. It was a family ritual. My cousins were there, my brother, my sister, my dad. This was it. Ed Sullivan with the trapeze people and the ballerets and the Jewish comedians and everything. So now Ed Sullivan, hey, we have a really big show tonight, and we have a Holocaust survivor. And we never know, we don't know what that is, a Holocaust survivor who is going to do a dramatization of what it was like to suffer in the Holocaust. All right, so it was
on the Ed Sullivan Show. This is like considered entertainment.
Okay. Yes, it was LEC. It was. I remember this so vividly. I'm like 14 at the time or 15. So vividly, because here, listen to this. So now they have this makeshift cell. And there's a piece of bread in a corner. And Elie Wiesel, you know, looking younger, is in agony. And he's holding his stomach and he's hungry. And he's looking for the piece of bread. And there's a German shepherd. And my dad says, I'm not going to put up with this bull. The other word, he's a fraud. And my dad was that kind of person. He turns it off. Then he goes, you know, to another room. And we just turn it right back on. Now, we want to see this guy. And it turned out later that maybe 20 years later, someone caught him walking in an orchard, a big field in France, in a short sleeve shirt. And he's expressing himself to his friends. There's no tattoo. He was never in Birkenau. Never. He's a liar, a fraud. And my dad called him out back in 1966. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's all I want to say about that.
Brother Nathaniel, where can people find you? I know we've got your X link down below. Also your Rumble channel. The link is down below. Anywhere else where people should find you besides X and on Rumble?
Okay. At Real Bro Nat, you can find my controversy. Okay. And on Rumble. And I'd stream also on Twitter at Real Bro Nat, Bible with Brother. Okay, because right. I'll take a Bible passage and I can, you know, I've read it. I can quote all over the place. And okay, I do Bible with Brother. I make it alive and interesting. I play some rock songs for the kids. All right. And then I have where I do tons of videos. I've been doing this since 2007, Real Jew News. That's my website. And I'll be doing one again on the bird flu tomorrow, the next pandemic.
Okay.
So that's where you can find me.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah.